Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
You get the first ray of light and the last ray of light.
Peace and quiet, worth its weight in gold.
We're coming to you from Galaganban.
The whole of Nevertire are our neighbours.
Check out Corinda.
Welcome to Growin', to the club in the scrub.
I've lived in Gadigal all my life.
We drove into Lightning Ridge and I was coming home.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud, Season 3, Villages.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
This is Outback Out Loud Live, a special live event recorded in Lightning Ridge. In this episode, you'll hear music from Warren Mason and an interview with iconic Outback painter John Murray.
As we gather in this time and space, I pay my deepest respects to the custodians of this great land on which we gather. I thank them for their upkeep of this land for the last 20, 30, 40,000 years. This land is us, together we are one. As we move forward in time, healing past injustice is of the utmost importance for our future leaders and young custodians of this great land now called Australia. Within this land we trust. Sit with me down by the river, 'cause I've been away too long. I remember the day that I was leaving town. I was only 16. My father said, it's time for you to go. Oh, my mother cried. My mother cried. Come sit with me down by the river, 'cause I've been away too long. I need to smell the gidgee just before the rain, 'cause it eases my pain. It eases my pain. I need to feel the dark brown earth between my toes. Between my toes. Come sit with me down by the river, 'cause I've been away too long. Mm-hmm. Please treat this land with respect as you move through this time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. We're doing a live podcasting event, and you're all part of it. It's the third season of our podcast, and we're in the third season, including Lightning Ridge. So that's basically why we're here. Just wanted to thank Warren for that beautiful performance. Rebel for having us here. John for coming along. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, and thank you, Emma. That was great. But I mean, on with the show, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got some burning questions for John. Tell us about your early life and the early days of your arts practice.
Oh, well, it depends on how far we want to go back, but I'll be fairly brief with this.
Don't have to be.
Oh, well, okay. You asked for it. No, as a kid, I enjoyed drawing and painting like most kids do. I wasn't special at it, but I didn't really like school and I was good at art, so that was one of my majors. I left school and went to art school, National Art School in Sydney. I did 4 years there, which was probably one of the best 4 years I've ever done. Just the mingling with other artists and getting a feel for what art was as a profession, as you could do it every day of your life. And I thought, gee, I love this life. It was just thought this is going to suit me. Anyway, I did really well and I started in the Sydney art scene. So I was straight out of school and I was pretty well picked up by some of the major Sydney galleries. And I had a studio in Newtown. And I was painting every day, and I'm really excited. I'm thinking, this is great. This is the life. I'm 21 or 22 by then, and I'm great. Anyway, this one of the gallery ladies kept, about 3 months into it, she came in, she said, "Oh, I like what you're doing, but..." And I'm going, "But..."
"But I'm amazing."
"But..."
"Thanks very much."
That was the first seed of doubt, and I went, "Really?" And anyway, she said, "Look, we've got other artists like you in our stable, and can you do a bit more of..." And she didn't actually tell me what she wanted to do, but she was putting more doubt into my mind. So anyway, she went away and I'm still painting and it's getting worse and worse. I'm trying to please this woman then with my painting. Towards the end of the year, she turned up again and she still wasn't happy with what I was doing. And by this time, I was shattered. You know, 21, 22, my big career, the bloody gallery doesn't even like it. So anyway, I just thought, right, that's it. And I quit. I stopped painting. I started travelling then. I went over to Perth. I went overseas for 4 years. Did everything but painting, but I was always drawing as I went. Anyway, by this stage, I've come back to Australia and I'm about 29, 30, and I've got a job at the Sydney Airport. Baggage handler. Great job. It was good too. It was pretty good back in the days. And I started drawing caricatures of all the porters around the walls in the lunchroom. So I wasn't doing any work anymore. I was saying, "You do my planes for the day and I'll do a big portrait of you on the wall, a caricature." And I started doing this. And I was doing this for months and I filled a massive big room of these paintings and drawings, all in black texter. And I thought, "Oh, I love doing this. I'm going to quit. Get in my car and go and be an artist again." And I'm just turning 30. So that's what happened. I then was in a van and I started travelling around Australia. And it was the little country towns weren't back in the early 80s receptive to, like, "What do you do?" "Oh, I'm an artist." "Really? I mean, what do you do? What's your real job?" And I just thought, "Oh, God, this is not good." And I got to Lightning Ridge and it was just paradise. Like, the best time I had in my travels was in India, and I was there for about a year. And it was the freedom of India and the way people lived, and they could build what they wanted to. And there was a joy in the place. As much as there's a lot of sadness, there's more joy. And I felt that in Lightning Ridge, and I thought, wow, look at these people they're building. Look at the houses they're building. Anybody can do it. And I think it was $12.50 a year for a claim then, a mineral claim, 50 metre square. And you could build whatever you want on it. And I thought, this is like paradise for me. So I took out one of these claims. There was no dole here then. And I had decided not to take a job at that stage. I was just going to be a full-time artist. And that was 40 years ago, and I haven't had a job since. So I've just managed to paint. But I will say it was a bloody long apprenticeship. It took 25 years before I started being a bit comfortable. The old camp that I had got better and better with each year. Two of the dignitaries here tonight, Mel and Susie, they now have my camp, and they've turned it into a wonderful theatre. So the camp lives on. I've since moved on, and I'm travelling more painting these days. But in that time, I've painted, back to Emma, I've painted every day, pretty much, whether it be street murals or paid murals or studio work in those 40 years. So I would encourage any kids or anybody that likes art, just follow your passion, musicians as well, you know, just follow your passion. And somehow I've ended up quite, well, reasonably successful. And that's just purely not with a love of money or trying to make money. It's following the dream of being an artist. And that was my thing, and I'm quite happy to say it's working. I'm comfortable.
Nice one.
Was that short enough?
No, that was perfect. What's your favourite subject to paint at the moment, and how's it kind of changed over the years?
Okay, I don't paint people because they seem to put a face to something. You know, if I paint a picture of you, everybody go, "Who's that?" When it's all about you, then, or if they don't know you, it's a nothing. But a landscape, I found was easier because people can read their own emotions into it. And what I did when I got here, the landscape was just amazing. It was so easy to find subject matter, and I painted here this for years, just a Lightning Ridge landscape. And over time, I've just gone further and further out. So I spend a lot of time in the outback, in the real outback, like the desert areas. And it, once again, it's landscape, but it's the life that lives in that landscape is what I try and put into it through old houses, their cars, their artifacts, things you see on the ground. You know, there's no such thing as just smooth ground. It's got man's rubbish in it. It's anywhere you go, it's rubbish. So that gives it a connection with land and landscape, you know, with human interaction with the landscape. So I capture that, and it's all a time and a place that I'm more interested in. That's with the landscape. But then there's the other side of things. I paint these emu, big heads, big emu heads, and they are my human personalities. So if there's a punk a hip-hop boy or something like that, I can turn him into an emu and put him somewhere, and people can identify that through the character. So you're not putting a human face to it. You're putting and it's animated, it's fun. And the biggest thing with those is it's not meant to be political, it's just meant to give joy, just be a fun thing to look at and get a smile.
Do you base your emus on people that you've seen?
You can do. One I did years ago, this was a paint. Look, I haven't done many figurative ones, but I did one of Tony Abbott once. And it was him coming out of the surf with his red and yellow cap on and his budgie smugglers. And prior to that, I'd painted a picture of budgie smugglers. Cause everybody's heard of budgie smugglers. And so I did a picture of budgie smugglers on the line with budgies in them, you know, just sitting on them. And I thought that was funny. And I saw him and I went, oh. And it clicked. So I've got him holding budgies and budgies coming out of his undies. And anyway, it got a bit weird. He did write me a letter. He did somehow get a card with that on it and thank me for my great humour. And so I thought that was pretty decent of him. I'm not sure about his other lent. But anyway.
He loved the portrait.
He didn't mind the portrait, yeah, which is amazing. And then the one back to the people. This is a little bit, I didn't mean it quite so badly, but I started painting Julia Gillard. And it turned out when I started doing it, her nose looked like an emu's beak.
She became an emu.
She became an emu. And so I put her in a dress and everything. And that went really well, but I've since taken that one down. I just, I don't like what I did there.
Fair enough.
But that's what happened when a person looked like an emu to me.
They're morphing into emus all the time.
They can do, yeah.
So you paint lots of birds. We've already covered that. Emus, you've done the budgies. I've seen you've done magpies and things before.
Yeah.
Why birds and what do birds inspire in you?
Oh, I just think they're a beautiful, free thing. I don't know. There's nothing particular about them. They're in the landscape all the time. They're a big part of it. They've got a beautiful song. They sort of remind me as people too, just the way they go about their business, getting dinner and, you know, their nesting and all that sort of thing. Their little tribal wars they all have. I don't know, I just love them. So I really, it goes back to people again. I don't like putting people into paintings because it's just, in a funny way, people are not that good for the landscape, you know. It's not funny either. It's just the destruction, the greed, all the sort of stuff that... Whereas animals have got a beautiful, gentle life about them, which I just like to paint.
You have merchandised a lot of your work through your gallery and stuff. And I guess I'd like to know sort of what are your biggest selling items and say how many, you know, calendars would you sell versus how many big actual original works and stuff. Like, how is your art business working?
Yeah, okay. Now, that's a good question, that one, because a lot of artists, and I've been accused of this a lot, of selling out. You know, I'm not being true to myself, being an original painter and just selling paintings. But I say to those guys, well, what do you do? And they say, oh, I work in a coffee shop, I do this, I do that, because they can't make their living out of selling their paintings. It's just impossible. Even for me, you couldn't make it solely out of paintings. As far as how to make a living out of it, and other young artists, if you're keen, merchandise is a real simple thing. And I sort of got this. I always wanted to be a musician too. You know, I did, and I can't play anything. I love Warren and everybody that can sing or do anything like that. I like their ability to bring out a record, so there's their original, and they make all these copies of it. You know, they've got all these, there's a million, if they're good enough, there's a million sellers, and so they're getting an income stream all the time. And then they have their merchandise, their CDs and their T-shirts and all that sort of stuff. And I sort of went along those lines, and I knew I couldn't, this was back in about, when I opened my gallery in 1992, it was relying on just paintings, and I couldn't keep up with it, and I just couldn't afford to keep doing that. Unless I did rubbishy little paintings all the time, just churning them out to make money, you know, at a cheap price. So I made the decision to... I went to the bank and I borrowed some money, $10,000 in the time, and I bought a V-nailer and a guillotine and a mat cutter. And I thought, right, I'll get... And six postcards. So I got six postcards, and with those cards I could then sell them as a card for, say... I'm just going to say for $5... put a mat around it and sign it, $15, the same card, and then put a wooden frame on it and a bit of glass, $35. So those six cards started to make an income for me, more so than the paintings. And I think that the gallery now is just a bigger example of that's what happened. Even to the fact of, I listen to what people want too, like this is part of the sellout, you know. I'm doing fridge magnets now, which I thought I'd never do because that's such a cop-out. But I had so many people in caravans coming in saying, you got a fridge magnet? You got a fridge magnet? I'm going, no, sorry, no, sorry. Anyway, swallowed my pride, did fridge magnets. Got a fridge magnet? Yes, thanks, $5. And it just changed everything. So you get 100 people coming through in a week buying a $5 fridge magnet, it adds up to your merchandise. So for, once again, for young artists, and I used to, with these cards that I bought, go down to Dubbo and sit in the Dubbo Central or one of those shopping centres and hire a stall at Christmas time just in the alleyways and sit out with my cards and prints, and that would make quite a bit of money for Christmas because it's really very difficult to sell your paintings. Now, if you go to a gallery, and there's nothing against galleries either, they were telling me what to paint and how to paint, and that sort of nearly ruined me as a painter. So I got my own gallery now and I paint whatever I want, you know. And I got my own commission. So you can do it on your own, but galleries are also a handy way to start getting out there. But I think with art, you've just got to believe in yourself, have fun and really want to do it. Most people will like it if you put your love into it, I've found.
Do you want to talk about public art?
Oh, public art, yeah.
So you've got so many... pieces in Outback New South Wales. So pretty much every town that we've travelled to over the 8 years we've worked in the region has got something by you if not multiple works by you just around the town. Do you know how many public works you have in this region, and what are some of your faves?
No, I've got quite a few. Look, this is going back to other... If I can start, talk about this too.
Absolutely.
When I first started, people wanted... And I will say this to young artists too. How do you get your name about? And there was walls in town. There's one there on the Gecko Cafe now. That I did that about 35 years ago because I had a T-shirt shop in there. And I did a lot of these for nothing. And the thing is, if you go and do a big mural for nothing... If your people will generally let you paint it on their wall because it's not costing them anything, but it's advertising for you, so you don't. That's it. That's your big thing. And everybody comes in town, and go, who did that? And you've got a shop selling stuff, so that'll help. So for kids, if they want to mural artwork and public artwork, it's really a big thing now. I did most of the ones in town. In fact, all of the ones in town, I haven't charged. There haven't been a cost on them. They're just free because Brighton's up our town for one, and I love this town. So it's made Lightning Ridge just a bit more happy and colourful when you first walk into it rather than shabby walls. And then from that, I got invited to go and paint like I had at Brewarrina. I did the water tower at Burke, Canamble, and it just went on. And I spent a bit of time in Brewarrina. So... because people have seen public art or seen my murals, that's led to more work. And it's paid work then, which is pretty good. And once you're in a community doing something for a couple of weeks or a week, you get a whole new thing. You meet new artists and it's just, I don't know, it's a wonderful feeling. It's quite, studio work's one thing, but you're on your own all the time. Just you in your head, you know. It's just, it's a bit hard sometimes and it can be a bit sometimes depressing. In the street, doing paid mural work, that's good. Everybody loves it and they're all talking to you and you've got a really good chat to the town and that. I've since branched out now into public art, which is just free art in the cities. 5 years ago, I thought to myself, I just needed a lift in life. And I always wanted to do street art, like Renegade, Banksy street art. You know, just go up and turn up and paint something. But with no permission, in a sort of a... like a dodgy situation, if you like. You shouldn't be there. Go rogue. And that was just the best feeling. I'll never forget the first one I did. I had a whole lot of people around. It was in a lane in Melbourne. And I just felt great. You know, I was bloody shaking with excitement. And I painted lots of things before, but people were taking photos and that moved me to do more. And then you end up in little lanes where there's people that are homeless or there's sort of drug-addicted people, but... you become part of their community too, you know, because you're in there doing up their lounge room or whatever. And it's true. And I can leave my stuff and say, I've got to go to the toilet. And they'll look after it for you. They just want to be known, have a face to their identity, because most people just walk past a homeless person and don't care. So that's been a really good thing for me. I've enjoyed that interaction with the street and doing these walls. And with that too... there's another bit of advice. It's better to ask forgiveness than permission. Just get out there and do it. And if they have a go at you, just say, oh, I'm sorry. I look at all this other stuff. I thought everybody did it. I thought you were allowed. I'm from the country. And I'm an old guy. So I do that a lot. And you can also say, well, if you don't like it, I'll paint over it. And they normally, if you've done something fairly reasonable, they just go, oh, no, that's pretty good. And they let you go.
What are some of the places that you've done street art?
Lots in Melbourne. I've been painting in Melbourne for 5 years. We'll go down there every summer. Winters are absolute shit. Are cold. They're freezing. It's like a drizzle the whole time. And then I thought, I met a lot of street artists that are just young kids and they're all painting. The community, the street art community is really good. And if I went to Spain, they all connect up through Instagram and they're in their 30s and younger. They like that I'm still painting as an old fella. It gives them hope that there is a future for painting. And I learn so much off these young kids. It's just amazing. But if I went to Spain, I'll find someone on Instagram that lives there and hook up with him or her. And then he'll say, oh, come over and paint with me. And then you go to some place and all of a sudden you're in a really good place in a different country, just painting somewhere in the streets. And then normally, you know, there's a lot of street art around and a bit of an edgy lifestyle with it. And it's really quite exciting. So I painted last year. I went to Glasgow, my mother and father's hometown, and painted there, which was a little bit unnerving because Glasgow is a bit of a rundown sad town at the moment. With all the shipyards gone and the young men, I think it's got the highest rate of male suicide in the world. There's just no work, and it's got a little bit of hopelessness to it. But street art's now starting to come out there, and it's brightening up these lanes. So that was good, and it was good to connect. London was fantastic. I painted quite a bit in London.
You've done a lot of big collaborations with the silos and stuff, and collaborated with a lot of local First Nations artists. How do you approach a collaboration, taking two artists' work and putting it into one?
If I go and paint in a town like Coonamble, even Bourke, Brewarrina, and Dubbo even, I always find an Indigenous artist to paint with. I think that's most important, because if we're doing community work, we are one community, and it's best to involve everybody in it. So I'm coming down with my ideas, and I find the local artist that wants to paint with me too, because the water towers are, you know, they're 30 metres, and it's pretty scary when you start getting up there and them things. So the artists, that's a priority. Find someone, and then we just talk about what we're going to paint. And I'll use what I'm going to say, and I give them their full creative freedom of what they're going to do. In a lot of cases, they're not sure about how to scale them up, so we'll work on that together. So they're learning a bit off me, but I'm learning a hell of a lot about culture and their environment where they are, which is just so good.
Last question. Why Lightning Ridge?
The freedom and the good mixture of people that live here. It's just, when you come to Lightning Ridge, I think it's like no other town in Australia. There's a freedom there where a lot of towns there, they've been as a structured unit for hundreds of years, a lot of cases thousands of years, but hundreds of years after settlement, and they're very staid in their ways. Lightning Ridge was never one of those towns that had anything going for it but opal mining in the last 100 or so years. And everybody that's come here has come from a different background. So they've come from all over the world, all over different regions of Australia, jumped into the big melting pot, all started looking for opal. That was the thing that got them all here. So they all got on. They were chasing a dream, and that's what I really loved. The dream of striking it rich or being their own person. And for me as an artist, when I got here, I thought, wow, no one cares. They all just want to be looking for something. They're all dreamers, and I'm a dreamer. So, and I still find that here. You'll see a lot of people retire in their caravans, and they'll build a little bit of a humpy or something, and they're so proud of it. They'll invite you around for a cup of tea and look at what they've built, and you just don't get that in other places. I'm going to finish up here down the cemetery down there when it's all over.
Thanks, John. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Emma.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative and is a collaboration between Signal Creative and Outback Arts. The Outback Out Loud community project and workshop series was designed and facilitated by Signal Creative. These episodes are the result of recordings and interviews collected by Signal Creative and community participants. You can find Signal Creative at signalcreative.net and Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au, and you can find both of us on Facebook and Instagram. Audio production, sound and music design by Emma Hoy. Community liaison, research and editing by Caroline Wallace.